Cozy's Game Room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And we are back again. Corey, I don't know. The world is now post St. Patrick's Day. I don't know.
Yes.
Almost spring. I don't know. Come with me, Corey, on this journey. Lead me into something. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I had a great St. Patrick's Day. We were coming back from my family's house down around the beach on the way back. I watched Manchester United versus Liverpool. Uh-huh. I've been here for a while. You know, I'm a huge Manchester United fan. You know, if you keep up with soccer, you know, it's not been their best season. But if you watch Sunday, it might be the match of the season. United won 4-3 in spectacular fashion, all the way in extra time with 18th minute winner, maybe 119th minute winner by a young Ahmad Diallo. Shout out to him. Phenomenal game. Really set off my weekend to a good start. Let's see what else.
Before you move on, I actually do have a soccer related question for the first time in my life.
Shoot.
Let's get it. Abby recently read a book called Normal People.
I've read Normal People.
You've read Normal People. Mm-hmm. So then we watched Normal People on
Devastating
Hulu.
Show. Devastating book, but Paul Mescal.
Yeah. Yeah. Just be aware. People wondering, do they want to watch Normal People? There is some penis in there, so just be aware. Yeah, just some. I mean, there. It's on both sides. There are boobies too. There's penis.
Sure.
So just be aware of what you're getting into.
It's mature.
But one of the things that really threw me for a loop was watching. So one of the main guy, his name's Connell, and in school he plays what looks like soccer.
And
I was like, oh, he's playing soccer. And then he just straight up grabs the ball with his hands and runs. And I was like, I don't think that's soccer. So Corey, explain to me what's going on there.
And so in the books, he plays soccer. And so in Ireland, it's soccer is not the prevailing sport, surprisingly. I do think that is actually probably surprising, but it is Gaelic football is what they is the predominant sport, and it's I don't know too much about it. So if I misspeak here, if there's someone over there who would like to correct us, feel free to email because I am curious. But Gaelic football is kind of a cross between rugby and soccer. Mm-hmm. There's like specific rules of when you can carry the ball with your hands and like when you're using your feet. But it has taken over as the predominant sport in Ireland.
Gotcha.
And so soccer or, you know, regular football isn't quite as big there. It's still huge. Let's not get that mistaken.
Yeah.
But Gaelic football, I believe, is like significantly has outpaced it as their country's like main sport. I think some football clubs have just transitioned to being Gaelic football clubs. And so it's its own thing. I don't know if it hasn't really spread. There's plenty of like teams in other countries that are doing it, but it hasn't like exploded the way it has there. But they changed that and it's more like culturally appropriate for the show that he'd be playing Gaelic football. So football.
And that was the thing too, was like at one point I was like, okay, like it switched back over to it and I was like, maybe it's rugby. But then I was like, no, it still just looks like a soccer ball. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, it's still got some soccer energy about it. So I really don't know. But Corey, thank you for that. I figured if anybody would know.
Yeah.
According to Wikipedia, it's been around since 1885. So little while it's been going on.
Yeah. I think it blossomed around the same time as regular English soccer did, and how that exploded out through the world is very, very different everywhere. And so like the whole idea of passing the ball wasn't a thing in like England. It was like deemed unmanly to pass the ball. And so it was just so many like 1v1 duels to score. But it, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I read Inverting the Pyramid by Jonathan Wilson. That name might be wrong. I'll find it later. But I think it was in Uruguay. They were never taught that you couldn't pass the ball. And so they became like passing fiends. And so in the first like World Cup, they showed up and were just passing the ball everywhere. And England was pissed by it because they deemed it unmanly. But there's nothing in the rules to say that you couldn't do it. And then over in Hungary, it exploded in formations. And we're not getting into this. This is a video game podcast. I'm sorry.
I know. Well, now I'm going down a rabbit hole where there's an Australian rules football, which is different, too.
Yeah, it's very different.
Mm-hmm. Goodness, Corey. Who knew? What a thing. Interesting. Yeah. Ancient Greeks balancing a ball on his thigh back in the BC times. Crazy.
Yeah.
Soccer. Am I right?
He's right.
Yeah. But Corey, yeah, video games. I built a child's playground this weekend.
Yeah, you
did. That's what I did for my St. Patrick's Day.
I love that.
Yeah, my daughter's birthday is coming up in soon. About a month. We wanted to get her that and had kind of gone back and forth between we didn't want to like buy a cheapo one because that's no fun for anybody. Plus, you know, my daughter's kind of like freakishly tall to some extent. So like, you know, we didn't want to get her one that she would outgrow. So we considered like building one, but then we're like, when are we going to find the time? And also like, that's not saving any money because lumber prices being the way that they are, we're just going to be taking more time and spending the same, if not more amount of money, to do a worse job potentially. So, ended up getting like a wood one that we spent, you know, 2 days putting together and, a lot of work, but she loves it. So
that's what matters.
Yeah, that's what matters. Other than that though, Corey, yeah, video games and work, I guess, is
my so much work.
So much work. Yeah. Last week was a work fest for me this week.
Same.
Yeah. Still work, but,
same,
you know, less of it, it feels like, which is nice.
Yeah, I think I probably had the arguably most important week work of my life.
Look at you.
And so, fingers crossed going forward. Send me well wishes, people.
Yeah. Corey may be moving along in his career.
Maybe
like a big boy.
I'll do it eventually.
Yeah. Corey, this week on the podcast, we're talking about some news, if there's news, who knows. Games we've been playing. I started Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yes, he did. Finally, folks.
Yeah, I'm a little bit into it, about 10-ish hours. So I've played some. I also have a game, Corey, to talk about that you probably have not played. You may never probably have heard not. Of and may never probably. Play, but it is called Mars After Midnight.
I have heard of Mars After Midnight.
Yes.
Solely because of the name is so unique that it stuck in my brain.
Yeah.
But I have no idea what it is.
Yeah. Mars After Midnight's exclusive to the Playdate. So I'll talk about that. I've played a little bit of it. Corey, you also have a few things to talk about as well, game-wise.
Sandlands and Dragon Quest V, Hand of the Heavenly Bride.
He traveled into the future, got a new game, and then also bought a $200 game just for funsies.
Yeah, loaning it from a friend. I think more Unicorn Overlord from both of us. Some updates on my end and some new experiences for you. So maybe no news from us. Maybe just all games.
Maybe just all games. Let's go. Corey, let's start it off. How about, I mean, you mentioned it, Unicorn Overlord. Project Unicorn. Like let's talk about it.
It's a good start.
Yeah, neither of us have played, so the game is out, but neither of us have played the full release. But yeah, I think I mentioned, but when I wasn't like, I mean, I was interested in it, in that like, oh, this is cool. This is, you know, it's a strategy game. Like, I'm sure it's fun. But then once reviews started hitting, I was like, all right, I'm going to immediately download the demo, give it a shot. So I played a little bit. I didn't finish it, I think partially too, because I was like, well, I want to also hop into Rebirth and stuff. So I'll play. And also the demo is like 6 hours. So I, you know, just kind of balanced it a little bit. But yeah, Corey, you've played a lot of the demo though. And you've, whenever you talked to us originally, you were not quite sure that it was hitting for you. Like, it was interesting.
I was on the fence.
Yeah, you weren't quite there yet, but now you are.
I'm there now.
You're there.
I'm there.
He's there.
Yeah. And so I think, and I'm excited to hear your thoughts on it as well. But played probably the first like hour and a half, 2 hours of the demo, and it was not. I think it bogs itself down a lot early on. It's teaching you so many things. It's throwing so many things at you. It's different than what you think it is as well, because so much of like the core aspect of the game is not involving you. Like I said before, and if you're playing it, you know, like when it comes down to the combat, which is often the meat of games like this, or games that like to present themselves like this, you weren't doing anything. And so it took so much of wrapping my head around the combat of the game is the prep of the game. And it started to, after a little bit, kind of get that the Football Manager and the Crusader Kings brain in me of like, no, there's a lot of underlying things going on here. There's a lot of prep I need to do, which is all of what Crusader Kings and Football Manager is. It's how do I set myself up to succeed for when it matters? And I think once that idea clicked in my brain, it was not game over, but game start for me. You know, I'm going around, okay, we need to collect, we need to do a lot of scavenging. That way we can set up this town to accept deliveries, and then I can station someone here, and then they can just naturally build things up on their own. And it's just a very long snowball effect of recruiting new people, I'm setting up different formations, different battle tactics. Okay, I'm going to shift these people around for like this style of battle that would, okay, it looks like there's going to be a lot more archers over here, a lot more towers over here, need a lot more mobility, need more evasion people. Well, not with archers, I don't need evasion people. I need to remove my evasion mercenary that I've hired, and so on and so forth. And it's just turning into like this full giant chessboard in my head, which is what I really dig with these games. And so I think, kind of moving away from this want and this aspect of being like directly involved in the combat, which you are so much in something like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, whose combat is still spectacular. You know, I'm like 30 hours into the game and like I'm loving it to death. Or coming off of something like Infinite Wealth as well, who has like a really strong turn-based system, and coming into this where like I'm doing nothing. It's so much like watching it happen. But now that I've again, kind of like flipped that switch. It's really working for me. And now I still think the game doesn't put, you know, it's not making a great first impression, I don't think. And I think that's kind of why VanillaWare made a 6-hour demo. Like, hey, get in here and play the 6 hours and like really like see if you like it. Mm-hmm. I think they kind of understand there's a lot happening in this game. There's a lot of underlying systems, mechanics, so many tutorials, so many different things that can be happening. And it's hard to cram that in, especially early on. And you're teaching the player so much of what's going on. It's a lot of information to absorb. And so I think with them setting a 6-hour demo is them kind of recognizing like, hey, let's give the player a bit of time. And like, it is, you know, this is the type of game where you enjoy and appreciate a bit of the handholdiness that the game can have, like a little bit of the guiding bit it can give you with all the tutorials, kind of like mock battles practice, mm-hmm. a little bit of easier things. Like you even have a character who's maxed out. Well, I don't know if he's maxed out, but he's level 20 and is just ridiculously OP. They're going to rip him away from me at some point. But like they know what they're doing. I think, and they've put together a really good game. It gives me some Octopath Traveler 2 vibes, not in like a lot of what it's doing, but in like the spirit of it, of you can play this game forever effectively. Like mm-hmm. you like just go and whenever like you want to set it down, you can come back in 2 months later and you're gonna be able to pick it up just like that.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's kind of been my like turning point on it. I haven't bought it yet. It is very much on the list to buy after Rebirth. It'll probably be that and Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yep.
But there's part of me like it's already the itch is already happening, so it might be a pickup. It is a good just kind of I say all of like these things of like you're doing all these like number crunching, like tweaking all these things, like trying to figure out what's going to be the best strategy, best synergy amongst all these people. And all of this at the same time, it is almost a perfect like do nothing game at the mm-hmm. same time. Like, you can kind of like just shut your brain off and kind of just meander around the map.
Yep.
Do battles, scavenge, and like not have to think a lot on it mm-hmm. as well. And so it's like a good kind of just like unwind game as well, compared to something like Rebirth, where like I'm laser focused on the story, laser focused in combat, trying to like figure out what exactly the game is doing at times.
Yeah.
It's a good just kind of a step back game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, but I've hogged a lot of the time on it now. I want to hear, give me your thoughts, give me your impressions. I'm very curious because I think it could be very up your alley, but feel free to prove me wrong.
Well, so I, at least the point that I am in the demo is the, it's the point where like the game itself, like nothing about what is being presented in the game so far to me is being like, ah, this is so great.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference, like the, I'm very excited about Unicorn Overlord though, because like I see what it's doing, and I kind of know the direction it's going and what it's going to open up into. And so I'm very excited about that, but I have not played enough. I haven't played the demo to the point where it actually does that. So I haven't mm-hmm. experienced it yet. But yeah, I've played a couple of hours. It kind of, you know, it loops you into the main core conflict, which is very just evil guy taking over the world
mm-hmm.
and fight, and it's the people, you know, living within this world, and now they're fighting back against it, and you're the you know lost crown prince come to claim the crown and rally the troops in this massive rebellion. And it's it's very kind of like just fantasy fair, and I think a lot of the strength, quote unquote, is in this very like kind of like pretty complicated, especially out of the gate, combat system where mm-hmm. it is, you know, I mean, I'm I'm working through it in my head, so I'm going to rehash a couple of things that you've already said. But yeah, I mean, it is a lot of there are a lot of numbers. There are a lot of things that are flying up on the screen constantly. And it's not stuff that you, I think, are meant to understand. Like in the first, like 30 minutes, you are part of the tutorial is like you moving around this troop of like just in-game level people who were doing all of these things. And like I was watching as these battles played out to try and kind of absorb what was happening. And it's tough because it is just like there's so much happening. This guy attacks and then this thing triggers and then this ability is doing this, which makes this person like do this and whatever. And I imagine a lot of the magic, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, starts to click in once you do get like a better grasp of that system. Like until that system starts to come in where you're like, oh, I see. Now I'm getting the special abilities. I'm getting the positioning layouts and stuff. Like I'm getting all of these things that are playing into how effective a build, like a troop might be or whatever. Like that's whenever it starts to click. And I think the comparison that I've heard that makes the most sense and I think clicked with me the most in helping me understand it was Final Fantasy XII's Gambit system. Which if you know anyone's not familiar, like Final Fantasy XII is the only Final Fantasy that's ever done this, where it had this like very robust like automation system for everybody. I mean, you could do it for just, you could do it for some characters and not others. You could do it for all your AI characters and control your main guy. You could do it for everybody and just sit back with like a thing of popcorn and just watch as your people battled. And the whole thing was this just robust kind of if then system that like just made all of the characters run through this automation to be like, okay, if this character is above or is under 50% health, I cast cure. If I can't do that, if nobody has cure, or if nobody needs to be cured, if I don't have enough MP, then I do the next thing. And it like it working through all of these things. And a lot of the game for people was trying to optimize that, was trying to like go through, and they were like, my goal in playing Final Fantasy XII is to not have to touch the controller during a battle. Like if I have done that, I've won. Like I've done something right. And so there was a unique, like, I think whatever Final Fantasy XII, like it's always been a divisive thing, and it's gotten a lot, like it's been a lot more positively received over time. But I think people like were critical of it because they were like, I don't want to just have the game play itself for me. Which, yeah, I get. And that was one of the benefits for Final Fantasy XII was you could do it or not do it. You could do as much of it as you wanted or as little of it as you wanted. Like my balance usually was I really went hardcore on it for my AI partners and I just controlled my main guy. Like that was just kind of my balance there. I wanted to have some control, but wanted to make sure those guys were doing some good work. And I think it's just a different type of strategy game. Like it is a, like you said, I mean, you playing Football Manager, like the strategy doesn't come in to actually playing the game of soccer. The strategy comes into optimizing everything so that when the game of soccer is being played, it goes off without a hitch. And so it's a different facet to that strategy thing, and whether or not it clicks is just, are you on board with like that level of management? Which for me, I'm super into it. Like I, again, have not made it to the point where it is actually doing that in the game, but in concept, like knowing where it's going and being like, oh, this is the type of strategy game that it wants to be. Like, I'm all about it. I'm all about like what that looks like and trying to figure out how to optimize it, how to, like, you know, I mean, and we've even been seeing this to, like, not as much of an extent, but I mean, I would compare it somewhat to, like, Bellatro playing recently. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, Bellatro has the strategy where, like, you know, your hand matters, what cards you're, you know, holding and discarding matters. But so much of the game is really building up this system of jokers that are like, okay, I have these cards that are interacting with each other in such a way mm-hmm. that they are going to trigger just massive amounts of points. Like, and you're trying to fine tune that, because you can be the best poker player in the world, but if your jokers are ass, you're not going anywhere.
Yep.
And so it's just a different, I think, underserved part of the strategy community that, like, I'm super into. So yeah, I'm very into the idea of picking it up, getting to play it. The art style's super cool. I mean, it's Vanillaware's whole classic thing. I'm really interested. I mean, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff, so I'm here for it. I don't know exactly when I'll pick it up, since I just started Rebirth, and we are, you know, as of the release of this podcast, a couple of days from Dragon's Dogma 2 and mm-hmm. Rise of the Ronin and Peach Showtime. I mean, just games on games on games, Corey. But yeah, I plan to pick it up soon. I wanna dig into it. I want to, if I want that itch without actually picking up the full game, I might just play a little bit more of the demo. There's plenty of it there. But
yeah.
I'm really interested in that.
No, it's so unique again, with what it's doing. I mean, it might have been done before, and there's plenty of, I think, other games, like you referenced Final Fantasy XII. A lot of people have compared it to something like Diofield Chronicle. Mm-hmm. There's other, like, games that have done something similar to it, but for me, this is kind of first in this style. And so took a while, but I'm very, very in on it. I'm really enjoying it. Story-wise, you know, there's not a lot there. I think there is a lot of choice that's coming into play. An example, like, I went liberated a town from, like, this apparently awful, like, mayor. And it gets to the end, and he's like, okay, go ahead, you know, like, execute me. Like, he was put in place by the evil emperor, kind of a thing. And so, and, like, from a, you know, side's point of view, you know, he's the enemy. And the townsperson comes up, like, no, he's an incredible. Like, he came in, like, after the emperor came through and destroyed the town, he's a stonemason. He completely redeveloped the place. Like, he's been nothing but good to us. You know, please spare him. And I'm like, you know, just because, like, he's under this banner doesn't, like, it questions the morality and, like, mm-hmm. your own morals. Like, just because, like, he technically is a subject or, like, falls under the rule here, does that make him evil? Like, like, the people here, like, have said, like, you know, he's clearly been a great help, and you have a choice to, like, do you spare him or do you execute him? He's your enemy. And, like, those morale choices, I think, are very, very interesting. I spared him. He's an absolute unit.
Okay.
He's a monster. So if that comes up, to, like, light spoilers there, but he is real good. But, you know, it's not doing anything revolutionary story-wise, but it's doing some, I think, unique things in some of its smaller moments, because that wasn't a, like, required mission. That just was a town I came across.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Unicorn Overlord. Maybe hear more about it later on. Maybe not. Who knows, but likely to hear more about it.
Love it. yeah, Corey, segueing into the other game that I've been playing, Rebirth, or one of the other games that I've been playing.
Yes.
Rebirth. Yeah. Talked about it a little bit here and there, probably every week for the last few weeks.
And we'll keep it so.
Yeah. But I finally started it because I finished up Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth. And so I dug in. I am in chapter 4 currently.
Okay.
About 10 hours ish in. Which, if I were super into side content, probably would be so many more, but that is not the case. And let me tell you the ways. Legitimately, like, so far, first initial impressions, I'm really into the vibe of things, like the overall just kind of energy of the story. Even though there isn't, like, for most of what's happened so far, there hasn't been, like, anything that's really happened in the story, you know? I mean, without spoiling too much from Remake, like, you know, this is after the party leaves Midgar. Like, they're now into the open world, and a lot of, most of those 10 hours have just been, like, we're moving in the open world. Like, there hasn't been, like, any sort of big conflict that's being looped in currently, even if there have been, like, seeds that are starting. But the presentation of it, I think, is really interesting. Like, the little, like, vignette that they have out of the gate is super compelling, and I think really kind of sets up a lot of intrigue. They have moments throughout where, like, characters are, you know, secretly talking to this person behind a closed door, and you're hearing a little bit of this, like, whispered conversation about, you know, some of this bigger plot stuff. And you know, so I mean, like, the seeds are there for, you know, the story to keep continuing on, for there to be cool stuff out of it. I haven't gotten to Gold Saucer yet. I haven't seen much of the, like, big side content, but Queen's Blood comes at you early. I'm enjoying playing that. It is a, like, it's a tough game to kind of wrap your head around. I think, like, I was really surprised by, like, how, because I think I'm used to just, like, oh, you play like a card game in one of these kind of games, it's going to be like every other card game to some extent. Like Gwent, for instance, like, love Gwent to death, but Gwent, like, I feel like I kind of grasped intuitively pretty quickly, because it felt like a card game that you've played. With this, it is such a, like, the way that these cards are interacting with each other, and how, like, how many there are, and how, like, little I know about them, where it's like, you know, I can't sit there and just, like, anticipate, like, ah, I'm gonna put this here, but man, if he throws out one of those chocobos, I'm gonna be eating it. It is a lot of, like, you have to, it's more about, like, the strategy and positioning, more so than just, like, oh yeah, I got the biggest card and I'm gonna throw it out in this spot and whatever. And I mean, there have been plenty of times where I'm playing it and I think I got it, like, I'm just running it, and then I just get stomped on because I apparently did not understand the game well enough to not let that happen. So super interested in continuing that on. Super interested in more. I in the Yuffie DLC, really enjoyed the Fort Condor stuff. I know it's kind of divisive, like, some people don't like it. I like it. If it's like it, then I will be all about it. Corey, I think you're on mute. I cannot hear you.
I was. I'd accidentally bumped my mic earlier. Sorry for that noise there, but I accidentally did hit the mute button doing that. Oopsie.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you did it on purpose, but then whenever I saw you talk, I was like, he's
yep.
Maybe. No. I am really enjoying that stuff so far. I mean, I'm excited about some of the other stuff that's coming down. But the other side stuff, so, like, the open world stuff is the stuff that really is not doing it for me. So, yep. Like, for just, you know, to kind of just to set it up. Like, I mean, effectively, like most of the open world stuff is so, like, I understand the logic. Like, going into Final Fantasy VII, like, thinking about it back in the day, like, Final Fantasy, at this point in the game, this is whenever the world opens up to the characters. Like, they are out there, they're exploring. Eventually, they get an airship. They get, like, they're just traveling the world. And how do you convey that in a game where we have, like, we have these big, massive open worlds? Like, how do you convey that, like, that level of scale and content? Like, well, how do you convey that level of scale if you're not filling it with stuff to do? You know, because if it's not, like, if it's not interesting to traverse or, like, play in, like a Breath of the Wild, then it's just empty grasslands. You're running around for no reason at all. So you got to fill it with something. And that seems like kind of the thought process through it, is that, like, to me, good side content is either going to be something that is relevant to the story, like, mm-hmm. oh, this is core to these characters, you know, like, this is progressing their story along. Like, I will always get behind, like, some sort of thing where it's like, ah, you know, we walked into this town and all of a sudden, like, there's this guy just came up to Aerith and was just like, you know, it's been a while. Haven't seen you since, you know, the storm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I get what you mean.
Sound like 1940s Kansas. But it's that kind of thing. Like, I'm going to be intrigued to be like, oh, like, I want to learn some of their history. I want to see what's going on here. I want to, like, because I know that there's, even if it's just like a narrative payoff, like, I know that there's going to be something at the end of this that I'm going to care about. Either that, or it just needs to be ridiculously fun, you know, mm-hmm. on that end, thinking of something like Yakuza, where so much of the mini games, like, are nonsensical. Like, why is Ichiban, you know, helping redevelop this island? Why did he become the CEO of a confectionery's company while he's in the middle of all this other stuff? Why is he delivering sushi on a bike?
Mm-hmm. Crazily.
Who knows? Right, crazily. Who knows? And who cares, frankly? Because it's well done, it's fun, and it also has, like, strong rewards in a lot of cases, where, like, maybe not all the time, but you think about, like, you know, Dundoko Island is like, mm-hmm. You're never going to have to worry about money again. Like, you just get flush with cash. And I think, like, the side content that never does it for me, or, like, used to do it for me, but doesn't anymore, is the stuff that is just there. Like, I used to play through, like, an Assassin's Creed, like, mm-hmm. just 100%. Do every single collectible, every single, like, nonsense side thing, just because it was like, I was in high school. Like, what else am I going to do? Yeah. Like, you know, I'm listening to a podcast while I'm just playing through this. But nowadays, like, time is at a premium, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, If I'm not interested in this, if I'm not having fun doing this, if there's not a reason to do it, why should I do it? And it's like fighting against, I think, a completionist compulsion in me sometimes, where I'm like, I need to check this off. I need to go down this list. I need to do these things. But by and large, like, most of the side content, at least that I've come across so far, is very just, you know, it is just filler content. And a lot of the ways that it's laid out is either, you know, they're request boards that have, like, just some random stuff where it's like, ah, my chicken got out, I need somebody to go mm-hmm. and find them. Or, you know, the slime got into the water system again. Can you find us some parts for it? And, like, to some extent, I'm thinking of it from the perspective of like this party, and it's like a, I'm like, what would they do? They're not just in this situation. They're not just going to be hanging around. Just like, well, you know, even if it's the nice thing to do, they're not going to be just like everybody's savior. They like they got stuff to do. And so like, I'm not, so as I'm going along, like I am not actively avoiding stuff. Like if I run across a treasure cache or some sort of like life stream little thing or, you know, whatever, like I'm going to do it because it's like, it's more materials. It's some treasure. It's whatever. Like I'm not going to just ignore it completely, but like, you know, I ran after doing a couple of the side quests. I started one where he was like, somebody took my cow. And like I started it and he was like, I need you to track him down and just left. I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this. And, you know, I mean, the way that I feel about it is not making the game worse, in my opinion, because like I'm not doing it. Like it's not like, at least so far, it's not impacting my enjoyment. I have heard people make comments where it's like they do feel like the game kind of railroads you into doing an amount of content to keep up with like the difficulty curve to make sure that you were on track.
It does, you know.
So it could start to shift in my mind over time, but like at least right now, I'm sitting there and I'm like, it's here. It's not bothering me that it's here. I'm doing the stuff that I want to do. You know, I've got Queen's Blood to do. There's going to be other stuff down the line I can do. The combat kicks ass and like the set pieces are cool and I'm interested in where the story is going and stuff. And like, that's just the stuff that I want to do. And that's fine. Like to me, that seems fine. The only bummer is that like, I think it'd be cool if they put some of that energy of just like filling it up with random shit into doing like something else that is a little bit more meaningful. Like for every 5 random locations that you put on the map, maybe you saved that time and made one like kind of cool little side quest that was a little bit more meaningful or I don't know. That's the only thing that's a little bit of a bummer to me. But yeah, I don't know. I am really enjoying it so far. And I think like tonally, I'm liking it better than Remake from that perspective of like, you know, I like the more diverse environments. Mm-hmm. I like, there's almost kind of like a lighthearted tone to some of the conversation, and stuff sometimes that just feels a little refreshing. Doesn't feel as like dour, as it was sometimes like being in the Midgar slums. And also combat, like super, like even Cloud, who like still is Cloud, like he feels more mobile and more like snappy. Like all of the characters seem like they've been fine-tuned, and it's making like combat just flow a lot better. I'm really enjoying that. So yeah, I mean, like overall, like open world stuff, not doing it for me. In the third game, just don't do it. I don't care. But the game itself is I'm super digging so far.
That's good. I'm glad to hear you're enjoying it. I was worried that the open world stuff would be maybe it's the nails in the coffin for it, because I'm at the end of chapter 7. Effectively the game is like, go to Gold Saucer when you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm actually not ready, because there is, so for all of the shortcomings, I think, of the side quest, which there are many. There are a few that are very good, and there is one that I am particularly interested in that has shown up recently. I won't spoil it, but it's surprisingly, like, it is a good one. And it's one of the, it's actually, I think, a really good one because, one, it's unique, the story's interesting, it's wacky at the same time, it's a little bit varied in what it's wanting you to do while keeping, like, a good structure. It's one of the few where they got it right. And I'm like, why couldn't you have had something like this in every of in all of the locations? Because this is, like, pretty compelling. But yeah, so much of what I think it's doing as a open world game is archaic. It feels disingenuous from the rest of the game, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, ultimately it's not fun. It's all in service to Chadley. And Chadley kind of sucks. I like him, but he kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And
there's way too much Chadley this time around. Like, Chadley in Remake was just kind of, he was there, he made materia, and he did some combat challenges. But now he, like,
does everything.
He's there, he pops up all the time. He has an AI girl version of him who also is talking to you. Like,
who sometimes also they're sucks.
Yeah, sometimes both at the same time. Apparently he's a cyborg, which also I didn't know. So he, like, you know, so there's that element to it, like talking to him. He's very robotic. It's not like he's an interesting character. He's just sitting there constantly talking to you about stuff.
It's just everything about him, everything that you're doing in the open world goes directly to him. I think if it was like an overall, like, him kind of being an overseer of it would work better. And there being like other reasons to do side content in the world, it would work so much better. But every time I'm doing something, it's just he shows up and I'm like, shut up.
Yeah.
Please, Chadley. I think he's a good character. I think like his service as a function within the game of being like your materia and combat guy is like actually a really great way for a game to have those ideas be implemented. I think that function he serves is great. But it's just so annoying. I think, you know, we're being negative right now. But the game itself is still so good and so fun to play. Like we both just said, combat is phenomenal. I think the story is really kind of ratcheting things up where I'm at. Not in like stakes wise, but like more things are happening. It's bringing in more layers where I'm at. And it's starting, like the deviations are becoming more apparent, I would say. Not in a bad way or in a like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this kind of a thing, but just in a, like they are setting up like something like pretty big.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for it. I'm 30-ish hours in, loving it. I really, really, really like the moments where they take Cloud away from me. And I don't know if you're having this issue. Or if you've had this issue yet, or opportunities, but like moments where it forces me to run with a, I know you've had this, where I have to be like Barret and Red 13.
Yeah.
Or there's a couple times where I'm Yuffie, Tifa, and Barret. And these situations where like I get to just be these other party members, and I know I can do this at any point, but there's always something about me that feels wrong not having the main character in your party at all times. I know I can take Cloud out at any point and just toss on the sidelines, but it feels wrong him not being in action.
Yeah.
And I really like when the game kind of gives me opportunities to be like other party groupings, because I find oftentimes their synergies might work a little bit better than Cloud just always being in there.
Yeah.
And so I've recently had a situation like that where I'm like, this is great. Like, this is phenomenal. These other characters can do different things than what Cloud can do leading. And I know they introduced that multiple different times throughout the game where someone else is quote unquote the party leader.
Mm-hmm.
But in the most recent one, I'm like, man, why don't we do this more? Like, I like Cloud, but you know, this is unique and I can change that for myself at any point. I'm aware, but I just really like it when the game does that, when they kind of like, hey, everyone else is great. I'm like, they are great. Can I just, can we just like leave Cloud on the sidelines for a bit? And they're like, no. I'm like, I get it. I like him too. But
so, yeah. No, it's, yeah, so far, I mean, I've had a little bit of that so far, but yeah, it's, again, I think they've tweaked some of the gameplay enough to where it's like it, cause I feel like it felt bad somewhat before to
in remake it did.
Yeah. To have that taken away. Whereas like now in Rebirth, like having it taken away does feel more like an opportunity, which I think is cool. So yeah, Corey, I'm excited to keep talking about it in the future. I'll be where you are next time. Who knows?
I hope so.
Yeah. Corey, what else have you been playing?
And so I've checked out the demo for Sandlands. It released today, I believe, or yesterday.
Yeah.
I've played like 45 minutes of that. And I'll get into that, why it's only been like 45 minutes. And I've been playing Dragon Quest V, Hand of the Heavenly Bride, on DS. And so the main reason why I jumped into Dragon Quest and why I was very excited when Sandlands dropped, as we talked recently, Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball, he passed away, and us talking had me thinking about like my experience with Dragon Ball and my time growing up with like his art style and what that meant to me. And I really, it made me very nostalgic, made me think about my time with Dragon Quest XI, which was before we even started the podcast, and how much I love Dragon Quest XI and how great of a game it is. And I'm like, there was a part of me that was like, I just really want to experience like his style, his art, like things that he has inspired, because he's not directly involved in Dragon Quest V. He's not the director, but like, you know, art style. I've heard good things about it, so I decided to borrow that, and I've been playing that for a bit. I don't know if I'm far enough in to where I would like to give my roundabout opinion on it. I'm like an hour and a half, 2 hours in. Really enjoying it. I am. It's a great time. Like I said, playing on DS, and everything's functioning very well. I've seen PS2 is the way that people like prefer to play, but while I'm loaning a copy, that copy is impossible for me to get my hands on without the deep pain to my pockets. All this to say, it like his passing, how we talked about like the effect and like legacy he leaves on, like I'm reminiscing on that and being able to step in and kind of experience that kind of makes me feel little again, like in a like a childlike way of like, ooh, yeah. Playing this in this format reminds me of like how I play games when I was a kid. And I'm just really enjoying the feeling of playing it. The game itself, you know, feels a little old, but it's been good so far. I'm not playing it with any guides, which might be detrimental to my time, because there's a lot of times where I'm like, okay, where am I going? What's going on? Oh, wait, I have to use L and R to move the camera around. I keep getting that. Oh, okay, there's a door, and I'm kind of working my way through, and some of the mechanics just don't feel right. But it's still been, like I said, a like very pleasant and soothing experience when I've been playing. I've been playing about like 15 to 30 minutes at a time. So it's been really nice. And that kind of leads into Sandlands as well. Which again, Toriyama, they released a demo. I think we've talked about demos a couple of times in the past, and I'm very pro demo in this regard. I like Sandlands. I'd like to point this out. The demo did flip me from like 30-70 not picking up to like 70-30. I am going to pick it up. And because there's nothing going on in the demo other than they drop you on the map and they're like, do whatever you want. There's no story. there's no direction.
Yeah.
Just figure out the combat. And the combat, hot take, probably not hot take, is good. Mm-hmm. You're running around as the little, I don't know his name.
I think his name is Beelzebub.
Something like that.
I think it is.
The little devil boy, and combat, you know, it's, he himself is very agile, very quick. You have like small, like regular attacks, heavy attacks. You can direct your allies to do certain things. But where the fun of the game is it has this effectively weapon wheel and mm-hmm. a titular like Dragon Ball fashion. It's like this little like pod thing that you click. You toss it out, but instead of a weapon, it's different vehicles. And so one mm-hmm. is this moving tank. The other one is like this huge, like Hulkbuster-esque suit. Another one is this Star Wars, like big wheel, like single wheel mm-hmm. Motorcycle with a rocket launcher on top of it. And that is satisfying to play.
Okay.
The combat itself is really good. And so I get why they dropped you in this demo. Like, hey, go crazy, go stupid. Like, yep. Figure it out, because you're going around and you're figuring out how to do these combats, threatening your allies, doing these different things, and you're getting overwhelmed. You're like, let me just jump in my giant suit mm-hmm. and just go to town. And you do. It is very satisfying to play. It like, you're not pulling off like these incredible combos or like these like spectacular moves. It's just the actual mechanics of it. It's tight. It feels good. Mm-hmm. Being like activating these suits or these vehicles, like it does feel like you have now leveled the playing field, especially against bigger monsters or against enemies who have similar mechs or suits or something like that. And there's these also huge bosses that you'll come across where like you absolutely need this Gatling gun on like the Hulkbuster suit.
Yep.
Played like 40-45 minutes of it, and that was enough for me to be like, okay, they. Whatever else is going on in the story, because there's going to be more going on in the story, what else is going on in the open world and missions, whatever that is going to look like, I don't know. But I know that they've nailed the core gameplay, the core combat, and like being able to move how all of it feels is flawless.
Yeah.
And so Sandlands is good, I think.
Love it.
Yeah, and so I've enjoyed both of my little bit of exposures with that. But again, this art style and like what that meant to me growing up, like right now, it could be all nostalgia talking, and that's okay. But I'm really in a happy place with both of those. And it just, you know, it puts me at ease being able to play them. And so those are my thoughts on Sandlands and Dragon Quest V. I will probably bring in like, full like, okay, here's what's going on gameplay wise, here's what I think of the story mechanics, all of that with Dragon Quest V next week, but just want to share like kind of why I decided to jump into it and just, you know, what it's doing for me at the moment.
Yeah, no, it's I don't think it's nostalgia. I mean, I haven't played it yet. I did download it. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, like you said, it came out yesterday, today, I just hadn't had the chance to play it. But no, it's I've been excited about it. I think Toriyama passing away made me like more committed to actually like picking it up and playing mm-hmm. it. But yeah, I mean, it looks really cool. I think the latest gameplay trailer that they showed of it was like one of the first times where I was like, I'm sold. This is like watching the capsules with the different vehicles being thrown out and just like that level of stuff. Like, who knows what the story is going to be like? Could be really cool. Might not be. I don't know. I'm not super familiar with the property. But yeah, that's whatever that loop is, whatever the combat is, like I'm down for it. So.
Yeah, no, it's, I think you'll really enjoy it, and I'm excited to hear what you think about it. I think that releases April 22nd, maybe 26th, something.
Yeah,
something late like April. That.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd recommend checking out Sandlands if, like, you're curious about it. it's a free demo. So why not, really?
Yeah. Corey,
you have one final game, right?
I do. Yeah. So I picked up a game on the Playdate titled Mars After Midnight.
Yes.
You may have heard of this game. You may not. But you've likely heard of its developer, Lucas Pope, developer behind Papers, Please, Return of the Obra Dinn. Mm-hmm. He was like one of the big, I think, kind of like selling points to some extent for some people with the Playdate, where it was this like, oh, Lucas Pope is making an exclusive game for the Playdate. Like, I gotta get it. That wasn't the case for me. Like, I mean, it added to it where I was like, oh, I'll be excited about it. But yeah, that it came out recently. I think it's a pretty, yeah, I don't know when the release date is. But yeah, it is a, so what it is you play as a pseudo bouncer, an organizer and bouncer.
Okay.
For a community support center on Mars that operates different support groups after midnight. So it operates in a place that, like, during the day is like a just some shipping and receiving warehouse, and then after midnight, you host a support group there, where you have food. There's like a meeting that happens too. And the goal is that you are trying to make sure that the right people are, you know, people come through. They're like, hey, I'd like to come in, but you know that this meeting's probably not going to hit right for them. You know, you don't let somebody who like wants to listen to the Beatles into a concert when they want to hear Elton John. Like, I don't know if that's an apt comparison, but I mean,
I get what you mean, but yeah.
Right. And so like, you know, so the first one that it comes out of the gate, it's like, okay, we're running Cyclops anger management, group tonight. And you know, it's, they gotta be a Cyclops. Mm-hmm. And they got to be mad. Yep. If they got two eyes, they got to go. If they're happy, they got to go. And so you get like a knock on the door and you use the crank to like open the little eye window thing. And you look at them and they'll kind of like talk to you and stuff. And you can get a glimpse like, okay, they got four eyes. Nope, you're not going to like this. Like, you know, not to be mean, but you're not going to get anything out of this because you're not a Cyclops and you also look kind of happy. So don't know if there's anything here for you. But then somebody comes up that you're like, they fit the bill. You let them in. And then they like just ravage your table of refreshments. So then you got to use your multiple tentacle arms to clean up the table. And then somebody's knocking on the door. So you're like, I got to clean up quick. I got to use the crank. I got to sweep the table. And then I got to put this stuff back where it goes so I can get everything nice and organized again. Because if I don't, and I go let the guy in, he's not going to enjoy the refreshment table the way that the other guy did.
Fair.
And at its core, it's a really simple loop. Like Lucas Pope, I think, has said, like, he kind of made this game for his kids to an extent. So it is not like it has a similar vibe and energy to something like Papers, Please, where you are like in Papers, Please, you are working at like a border crossing and you are inspecting people's papers and you are trying to read these people, like look at them, like match, make sure they look the same, make sure all of these things are tracking. It's just a much more like simplified version of that. But it's such a, like it accentuates so many charms of the Playdate where it's just these like crisp pixelized graphics. The crank stuff is super charming. The soundtrack's great. And it's just this fun little thing that like you know, the different support groups, I haven't like done a ton of them, but they do actually like move up in complexity. So like one of them is the Shy Smilers support group. And it's people who like, if you're looking at them straight on, they're going to frown because they're shy. Okay. But if you open the thing halfway to where that you can't see them, you can only see their mouth, mm-hmm. then they smile. So you got to kind of like, so now you're looking at people and you're like, all right, you're frowning, but if I close the door a little bit, are you happy now?
Yeah.
And if I open it, are you sad again? Like you're kind of kind of doing some of that. Or like, you know, there's a clogged pores support group. And so like this guy comes up and he looks pretty good, but then you take your telescope and you look at his face and you're like, you got them clogged pores.
You should wash your face, buddy.
Yep. We got the stuff for you. Come on in. So it's, you know, it's not anything like, I'm not sitting there being like, man, this is a tough experience. It's just a super charming little thing. And I think like continues to highlight the fact that like the Playdate is such a cool little system. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
That's like, I haven't given a ton of time to, like I've played, for anybody who has a Playdate or, you know, is familiar at all with the catalog, like, cause like, I mean, now it does have a pretty robust, store. Like initially it didn't. Initially, whenever it came out, the games were limited to Playdate, like Panic, the developer, like their own season of stuff. So it was specifically like games that they would roll out. And as far as I'm aware, they're still doing that. Like they're still on season one, but I imagine there's going to be a season two. But you know, then you can go into the catalog and buy these games. Sometimes they're free, sometimes they're $2. Mars After mm-hmm. Midnight was $6. Like,
nice.
So I mean, they're all like just small little things, but they're all like, you know, they have these really old 8-bit style, like Game Boy graphics and stuff. And it's just a really like charming little system that has a lot of just cool things on it. And like, I love the fact that it exists. Like it feels like, to the point, Corey, where like, so the designer of the system is a company called Teenage Engineering, which if you're into playing music at all, you might be familiar with them because like they designed this and they've designed other kind of ancillary stuff. Like there's a AI tool called, I think it's called the Rabbit.
Okay.
That they also designed, that's like just a super well built piece of hardware. But primarily like they've made, one of their biggest things was the OP1, which is like for a long time was like the MIDI synth keyboard. And just like, but if you look through their website, like you look at all of their stuff, it is like they, just looking at their design could convince you to buy everything that they've ever made. Like I think one of their most recent things that they made was like a tape recorder, like just a digital tape recorder for like $300. And like there's in no world is there a reason that you need it, but every part of you wants it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing where like they just design things. The Playdate is like this, where it's designed so well. Never mind. So their TP7, their ultra portable audio recorder. So their little tape recorder, it's actually $1,500.
Casual. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, they make some super, just their design of their stuff is just incredibly cool. So that's the thing with the Playdate, is just the fact that it exists, that it's like this really solid little thing that like has these cool little games on it that you can play for a few minutes. That you can have this unique experience where you're just cranking like an idiot on some of these little things. Like you're playing a surfing game and you're like trying to, which that game I've never figured out. I don't know. Like that was one of the first games that launched. You're supposed to like crank it to like line him up to where he's like surfing along. Never once. He goes up and immediately just underwater. Like I cannot do it. I don't know.
I believe what it is. This is the goal for next week. Have him go.
Have him go. Yeah. But yeah, I am motivated. I have plenty of gaming things in my life that like I need to be messing with, but like I am motivated to play more of the Playdate because there's a lot of cool stuff in there. And it deserves all of the love.
Yeah. Every time you talk about it, I'm always like, do I get myself a Playdate? You do very well of, speaking on it and like bringing to the table what it's bringing to the table for you. Yep. And so every time I'm very curious about the Playdate, every time you talk about it, I immediately, when we get done recording, I pull up like, all right, Playdate, how much is this? It's a maybe. It's always a maybe. Yeah. Yeah. And it's going to happen again. And it could be the time. Who knows?
I mean, more games than they've ever had are available now. Other games that I can recommend that I've played on there. They have a game called Inventory Hero that is fun. It's kind of like a little dungeon crawler little thing where you're managing your inventory. Going back to the beginning of our conversation, auto fights. You have to manage his inventory to make sure that he's up to snuff going through these fights. Casual Birder, where you're a bird watcher. That one's also pretty cool.
Sounds pleasant.
Yeah. You're wandering around like a little almost kind of looks like a little SNES RPG a little bit while you're walking around. Yeah. A lot of cool little games on the Playdate. Not for everybody, but super cool.
Yeah.
If you want some just cool little experiences. Corey, do you have anything else today?
No, I don't think so. I think we comprehensively went over everything we've been playing, which ended up being a lot more than I thought it was going to be, truly. Yeah. Like we both had very busy weeks of work and, you know, coming in, I'm like, no, it's a slow news week. You know, not a lot. It's like, there's a lot of rumors going about, but we don't like to mess with rumors too much. And so I was like, what's this week going to be? And it ended up being a lot and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Corey, where can people find you on the internet? If they want to find you on the intranets.
I would like them to, find us at arcadecozy@gmail.com to tell us exactly what Gaelic football is or Australian rules football is. Mm-hmm. Even if Chris isn't like super interested, Corey's sports brain is interested. And while I can easily look this up on Wikipedia and really get the info that way, that's just not fun. So send that over our way. Enlighten me, please. I'm looking for a new passion. Always. So other than that, you can follow me on Instagram at #NutSlingingNutThrasher. What about you, Chris? Where can they find you? And if they can't find you, who can they follow this week?
You can't follow me yet. Maybe one day. Who knows? I've realized I forget to say it sometimes. Intro outro music, Johnny Be Good 89. Shout out to him. Actually, in my little rabbit hole looking at teenage engineering stuff, I did have a little moment in my head where I was like, you know what? Maybe I get a synthesizer. Maybe I can, you know, for reference, I play music. I've been in music for a little while. Yeah. Like
Chris is a man of many talents, people.
Yeah. And I've dabbled with synthesizers, but I was like, maybe I get into a synthesizer. And who do I ask? Because he plays a lot of synthesizers. Johnny Be Good. Mm-hmm. Send him a message, which is like, hey man, what would you recommend? So yeah, great guy, does cool stuff. If you want to follow somebody else on Instagram though, relatedly, official GAA Gaelic football account on Instagram, go follow them. Who knows what's on there? Looks like pictures of men
playing Gaelic football.
Yeah, so if you are about that, they also have big sticks. So that's even more confusing.
I've seen something about that, and I think I always dismiss in my brain, like, surely that's not a real thing, but maybe it is.
Yeah, maybe that's a cricket thing, or I don't know. Now I got to look this up really quick before we leave. Just
this is why I've asked the people to enlighten us, because there's things happening that we don't understand. And I kind of need to know.
So, hurling.
Well, I know what hurling is.
Okay, but it shares. So, apparently it's very closely related with Gaelic football.
Oh?
So, yeah, one of Ireland's native Gaelic games, and it shares a number of features. So, I imagine there's a little bit of, like, cross-pollination there, where there's a little bit of Gaelic foot. Maybe people who play Gaelic football also play hurling.
I mean, that wouldn't shock me. Interesting, though.
Yeah. Who knew, Corey? The more you know. But yeah, Corey, till next week, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is Hectic. Why should your hobbies be too?